Blog Talk Radio.
Than at his Washington Hotel,
which quickly filled up with the very lobbyists and swamp creatures Trump had railed against during his campaign. Oil companies, mining interests, insurance executives, foreign diplomats, defense contractors all rushed to book their annual conferences at Trump's hotels and resorts, where cabinet members graciously addressed them. After hiking the nightly rate from 653 to
32% higher than other local luxury hotels,
Trump collected $2 million in profits from the property during his first 3 months in office. By late August, the hotel and restaurant had hauled in over $8 million in revenue, and although Trump has pledged to give away any money his hotel earns from foreign governments, the plan, the plan contains a lucrative loophole. Employees at his hotels admit that they make no effort to identify guests who represent other countries, meaning that much of the foreign money spent at Trump properties flows directly into his own pockets. And on March 28th, a federal judge allowed the lawsuit to go forward that charged Trump with violating the Constitution by accepting money from foreign governments at the hotel.
At his D.C. hotel.
Yeah.
That's only a week ago.
Yeah.
In fact, though Trump refuses to disclose the details of his Marriott business operations, he continues to enjoy access to every dime he makes as president. Instead of setting up a blind trust to avoid conflicts of interest, as other presidents have done, Trump put his two grown sons in charge of his more than 500 business entities. His sons regularly brief Trump about how the enterprises are doing, enabling him to personally monitor how his decisions in office affect his bottom line. What's more, only 15 days after this Eyes Wide Open trust was set up, Trump amended the fine print to allow him to take money out of the operation anytime he pleases. The loophole, buried on page 161 of the 166-page form, stipulates that any net income or principal can be distributed to Trump at his request. Far from putting his wealth in a blind trust, Trump asked the public for its blind trust, effectively sticking his money in a piggy bank in Don Jr.'s room that he is free to raid at any hour of the day or night. Trump's children are working hard to cash in on his time in office, especially as foreign investors. At taxpayers' expense, they have loaned to Uruguay, the Dominican Republic, Dubai, and India in search of licensing and real estate deals, trading on the president's influence in exchange for investments. But the biggest complication of Trump's presidency, and the one that he works hardest to keep a secret, is the way his entire business operation is mired in massive debt. Rather than being independently wealthy, public records show Trump and the business partnerships in which he is a leading investor owe big banks and foreign governments at least $2.3 billion, far more than his disclosure reports indicate. His largest single loan for nearly $1 billion is from a syndicate assembled by Goldman Sachs that includes the state-owned Bank of China. If either Trump or Jared Kushner, who tried to shake down Qatar's finance minister for a loan, winds up pending to negotiate new terms of his ballooning debt, America could find itself being dictated by a foreign government, all because the White House, thanks to Trump's business model, has become a true house of cards. Oy boy.
What follows is 105 days of official corruption.
501 days.
What did I say?
105.
Oh, sorry. Of corruption for a small-time graft and brazen influence peddling to full-blown raids on the federal treasury. Given how much Trump has disclosed about his finances, this timeline of self-dealing is undoubtedly only a fraction of the corruption that will eventually come to light. But as even this initial glimpse makes clear, Trump isn't draining the swamp. He's monetizing it.
That's really awful.
Yeah. The stars have aligned. I think our brand is the hottest it has ever been. Eric Trump speaking at the hotel in 2016. Imagine that? Yeah. Just all kinds of notes as to how corrupt these bastards are. But, yeah. So there you go, folks. Trump is as corrupt as it gets. And I think we're going to find out more as Mueller unlocks all the keys and all the doors.
No, I don't think he's going to go there because a lot of that he's happened before.
No, he's just corrupt now.
Yeah.
He's corrupt now.
He was corrupt
and
before.
And those things are influencing him. You know, see, what's happening is...
You have to
is,
prove that.
Yeah, well, what's happening is they've already have. I mean, he owes billions and billions of dollars. They know where it's at. But now he owes China, and he owes Russia, and he owes others. So all of these bastards are into this guy for billions of dollars.
He'll just renege on
them. No, he's not. He's kissing their asses. But what he's done now, raising the tariffs, he's starting to... It's getting so close, and he's getting so worried. Now he's starting to put distance between him and Russia
uh-huh.
and China. You know, making big bad boy deals. You know, like, oh, we're gonna raise your tariffs. Oh, you're a badass guy. But then he calls him and congratulates him. You know.
Yeah, that was really.
The guy's a shit. This guy, Trump is a nutball, corrupt son of a bee. And you know what? This is really funny too. Trump has no love for Bezos. You know, Jeff Bezos, who owns
Amazon. Yeah, Amazon caused Donald Trump to lose $400 million in net worth.
Yeah.
That's why he hates him.
Yeah, sure.
So what happened there?
Let's see what it has to say. Yeah. Because turns out he's...
That's kind of large.
Yeah.
Amazon caused net worth, says Forbes. How? President Donald Trump's net worth declined more than $600 million in the past year, according to Forbes 400, list of richest people in America. However, surprising Trump's loss may be, the reason for it is even more unexpected. Trump's real estate holdings, specifically those in New York City, have taken a big hit in the past year, as retail values are struggling in response to Amazon's e-commerce gains. According to Forbes research, the president is worth $3.1 billion, down from $3.7 billion a year ago.
But he owes $2.3 billion.
The loss has him moving from 156th on the list to 248th. In accounting for the president's $600 million write-down, the magazine cited the presidential campaign, which eroded his personal wealth, an expensive lawsuit, a dip in the New York City's real estate market that hit retail particularly hard, values of several Manhattan properties, particularly those on or near Fifth Avenue, have dropped, shaving nearly $400 million off his fortune, the magazine says. Appearing on CNN's Tuesday, Forbes assistant managing editor Carrie Dolan leveled blame for Trump's real estate losses on e-commerce domination over retail, mentioning Amazon, specifically citing the lease of the Nike Town store and the Trump Tower property. Dolan said that retailers are suffering, even on the high end. It would appear that Amazon's strategy of e-commerce over brick-and-mortar retail is winning, and this is having an effect on real estate values, she added. Without Trump's taxes and full financial releases, it's difficult to get a full picture of the president's net worth. But as it applies to his real estate losses, Dolan is confident in Forbes' analysis. We talked to tons and tons of real estate brokers who are super familiar with the properties, particularly in Manhattan, she told CNN. Outside of retail in New York, another hole in Trump's wallet is Trump's International Hotel, said Dolan. The magazine has been in touch with Trump's finance people who said in the past year Trump had taken $170 million construction loan to complete the property's construction. So even though the hotel may be doing well, said Dolan, the property's net worth is still down. Meanwhile, Jeff Bezos, the Amazon CEO, took the number two spot on the Forbes list for the second straight year with an $81.5 billion net worth. Oh, that must have infuriated him.
So anyway, that's why you don't like him too much, okay?
Because he's richer than he is.
Yeah, I don't like him. Because he's losing his money because of him. And he's got some issues, I guess.
Huh.
Got a few issues, man.
So what else is going on?
Oh, yeah, we got a lot of stuff. Recreational marijuana licensing to begin Monday, which is last Monday.
In Massachusetts?
Yeah.
And that's a Boston Globe
article. I thought that was so cool. Just thought I'd let you know that it's happening in Massachusetts. Of course, Connecticut, being the dinosaur state that it is, it's a blue state, too. You'd think it'd be more progressive.
Yeah, you would think so.
But,
it's not progressive at all.
It's just like they legalized pot, medical marijuana, but... On Monday at noon, this was April 1st, this came out. Monday at noon, decades of debate all came down to this. A click of the computer mouse by a state technology contractor. What's that? With that, the Massachusetts state government system for legal pot use will blink to life. And businesses can begin applying for licenses to grow, process, and sell cannabis to adults 21 and over.
Can they put it right in the liquor stores?
Yeah. The behind-the-scenes milestones will not have an impact.
An immediate impact on consumers, but it does not mark. But it does mark the beginning of a process that regulators expect will lead to the debut of recreational pot sales in July.
That's July of this year. And for a long-time activist, it's a moment some believed that might never arrive, might have never arrived. Isn't that great?
Hmm.
Yeah, I think that's great. So... Massachusetts is pretty progressive, always have been, except when they, elected Romney for governor. That was weird.
That was a blip on the radar, huh?
73 teens were shot to death in 37 days since Parkland shooting. Can you imagine that?
No.
That was only in February. And there have already been 37 teens that have been shot to death. I want to read the clue with
schools?
This. In our schools and with guns.
Pretty scary for kids.
Isn't it, son? That's why, when you get assholes like, Ted Nugent came out and then called all those kids liars and cowards and names.
He's
an idiot. Yeah, he's a complete idiot.
Numbnuts.
Christ. Gonzo. That was his biggest album was called Gonzo.
Well, he's Gonzo in the head.
Oh, he was. Wing bangs.
Life was only beginning for Daquan Tobar. At 17, the South Bend, Indiana team was starting to figure out some of the keys to success in the adult world. Good eye contact, a firm handshake, and a confident tone of voice. Daquan was still in school, but he wanted to be a welder when he completed his education, his family said, with a mentor teaching him how to write a cover letter and fill out a resume to help him stand out from the pack. People who knew Daquan had high hopes for a young man coming into his own. But on February 17th, Daquan was gunned down in broad daylight, and he walked home from the store with his grandmother. He suffered gunshot wounds to the leg, hip, and head. Daquan was one of three 17-year-olds who have been fatally shot in South Bend this year. A fourth teenager, just 13 years old, was killed in the city in late December. A lot of people are just hair trigger away from snapping, I really think, and if you happen to have a gun in your hand, you can't put that bullet back in once it leaves, said Michael Elliott, organizer of South Bend's on-site prayer ministry, in an interview with WNDU at a recent vigil for Daquan. Daquan's story is painfully familiar, not just in South Bend, but in many places across the nation that is publicly grappling with the effects of gun violence following the February 14th school shooting in Parkland, Florida. At least 73 teens have been shot to death in 37 days since that massacre, according to the HuffPost review of a database compiled by Gun Violence Archive, a not-for-profit organization that tracks shootings across this country. Because Gun Violence Archive calls its data from media reports, there may be cases that haven't been included. That's a rate of nearly two teens each day. Among them were Caden Vague, a California student who died on his 16th birthday after accidentally killing himself at a shooting range, and 15-year-old Jay Diaz, in El Paso, Texas, who survived a childhood fight with cancer, only to be killed when a family member fired his shotgun while cleaning it. Oh, my God. The deaths include Eileen Viveros Vargas, a pregnant 18-year-old allegedly killed by her boyfriend in Minnesota. Cortland Arrington, a 17-year-old fatally shot at her high school by a fellow student, Christopher Ruckman. A 14-year-old slain by his father, who also shot his 12-year-old brother in what police say was a double murder-suicide. An unnamed 17-year-old who took his own life in a bathroom of a Missouri high school. There are too many incidents to document each of them here, but the dozens of cases are disproportionately centered in urban areas. They include teens gunned down by other teens or slain by parents or relatives, young people in public and at home, in murders, accidents, and suicides. The tally doesn't include victims younger than 13, nor does it count any of the many teens who suffered only gunshot injuries over that period. The slaughter of 17 people at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School has sparked a national awakening on gun violence. But as the throngs of young people prepare to gather in Washington, D.C., this must have been written a while ago, in cities across the world on Saturday for the March for Our Lives, the nascent youth-led movement still seems to be figuring out how to best communicate the breadth of the issue. Each of these lives cut short is a reminder of the relentlessness of gun violence in America. Much of the conversation around guns is focused on school safety and attacks carried out with military-style semi-automatic rifles, such as the AR-15 used at Stoneman Douglas. Those may be the most pressing concerns in a well-to-do suburb communities like Parkland, but in communities of color, and specifically black communities, gun violence is a more of an everyday reality. The Parkland students have themselves sought to use their platform to remind the nation that this bloodshed extends far beyond the sort of tragic mass shootings they experience and which reliably attracts the national spotlight. The Stoneman Douglas survivors, who have become the face of Never Again movement, met with students from Chicago schools this month to discuss ways to address the shootings that tear through neighborhoods on a routine basis. And earlier this week, they criticized the media for the racial disparity in its coverage of gun violence, which serves to silence victims from less affluent communities and from communities of color. We have to use our white privilege now to make sure that all of the people that have died as a result of gun violence haven't been covered the same can now be heard, said David Hogg, a Stoneman Douglas senior. God, they must hate him.
Oh, yeah.
He speaks truth to power. As the movement evolves beyond the marches, rallies, and media appearances and into more concrete advocacy, it will be on young leaders like Hogg to make sure that it encompasses the voices and experiences of people like Daquan Tobar as well.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That kid's really done a lot, and I hope he can make a real difference.
Yeah, me too. I was going to, in fact, I still might have got a few minutes, since we're in the light of David Hogg. And I did want to mention something about Stephen Hawking before we leave, but just to follow up on that David Hogg thing, I thought it would be,
a wonderful, strong kid. He's been able to stand up to such unfair criticism.
Oh, God, yeah. Okay.
Well, let's go on to talk about
that's okay.
The passing of Stephen Hawking. Okay, I'm just trying to get my... Okay.
hundreds of line Cambridge Street to honor Stephen Hawkins. Yeah, this was this was on the 31st.
He's another person who was amazing.
Yeah. And, oh, please go to my website, lasteelshow.org. You're probably there now if you're catching this show. But read my article on David Hogg, why conservatives hate David Hogg. All right. And it's a good article. Hundreds line Cambridge Street to honor Stephen Hawkins. This is by the Associated Press. The life of renowned physicist and author Stephen Hawking was celebrated Saturday in the English city of Cambridge, with hundreds of well-wishers lining the streets for a glimpse of the hearse carrying the remains of a private funeral. There was a spontaneous burst of applause outside St. Mary the Great Church when the hearse arrived. The bells of the church tolled 76 times, one for each year of Hawking's remarkable life. And Hawking was remembered as a brave man who triumphed over motor neurons disease by continuing his research into space and time even after paralysis set in and his muscles faded. Some 500 invited guests attended the funeral for Hawking, who died on March 14th. Actor Eddie Redmayne, who portrayed the scientist in the 2014 biographical film The Theory of Everything, gave a reading from Ecclesiastes during the service. There was also a reading by Astronomer Royal Martin Rees and eulogies by one of Hawking's children and former student. Hawking's
family released a statement saying they choose to hold a funeral in the city that he loved so much and which loved him. Flags were lowered to half-mast in many parts of Cambridge to pay tribute to Hawking. The service, The service was officiated by the Reverend Callie Hammond, Dean of Cambridge University's, Gonville and Cassius College, where Hawking was a fellow for 52 years. A private reception was held afterward at Trinity College. Hawking was known for his groundbreaking research on black holes and other phenomena. He was also the best-selling author of A Brief History of Time and other books, and a pop culture figure known for, among other things, his appearance on the Simpsons TV series. Hawking will be cremated at a later date, and his ashes are to be interred at London's Westminster Abbey.
Wow.
Near the remains of fellow scientist Isaac Newton. Oh, my God, what an honor.
What a great honor, yeah. Oh, that's great.
Well, England has produced
some
great people for such a small country.
Yeah. You know, it's, I'm sorry. Oh, I wanted to tell you all to please check out my website, lasteelshow.org, where we are putting up a new, and our YouTube channel, LA Steel Show, LA Steel Television Show, or LA Steel Show YouTube channel. And you'll see a new video, a three-part program where Lila interviews the Buddhist master, Patriarch Sakya Trism, and we recorded a full teaching of his that was done in Vermont, Massachusetts.
What year was that?
2003.
That was one of the most profound experiences of my life.
Yeah, and I think
very life changing for me about things. Yeah.
Yeah, his whole the whole lecture. Or lecture, I should say, his teaching actually was more of a spiritual kind of a mass type of teaching, but Buddhist mass. But he talked about wisdom and compassion.
Mm-hmm.
These were the topics, the main topics, and he broke it down into several different segments. Okay, teachings, which are one another part of that was the ethereal body. And the spirit, in other words, life ends but continues, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It just gives you a whole different outlook on perspective. I recommend you.
He's a wonderful teacher.
It'll be up there in the morning.
Gifted teacher.
Tomorrow morning. It's uploading now as we speak on YouTube, but it'll probably be up by tomorrow morning, early. So please look forward to that.
He certainly is a Buddhist master.
And in the meantime, so many things have been happening. So, you know, I was hoping if we had a little more time tonight, I would have gone through the Flint, Michigan water contamination trial has been approved by the court. So they've
thank God.
And the names, and plus I had an article I'll read it next week probably, but the names of all the white supremacists, the neo-Nazis running for elected office this year, and it's amazing.
Make sure that you don't vote for them.
Yeah. I'll just give you that article, too, so that you know which one where it is. Is there something I put it? And it's from Huffington Post. It's dated March 31st. All the white supremacists running for office in 2018. You know, check that out. It's amazing. It has all of them, where they're running and everything. Just amazing. We'll go over that next week, too. And we'll talk a little more about all these other crazy things. Israeli officials say that John Bolton would often tip them off as to U.S. plans at the U.N. That's how confident. Yeah. And there's one more thing, that a campaign to impeach Trump will tour the country to pressure elected officials to remove the president. This guy, I think his name is Bear or something. I forgot what his name is, but he's a billionaire, and he's going after Trump in a big way to impeach him for corruption and everything. And he's got a huge movement out there. But anyway, that's the end of our show tonight, folks. And I want to thank you for joining us. And hopefully we'll be talking to you next week.
He's very brave to do that. It's very position when you speak up like that against such powerful people.
But Jimmy Walter, our old friend, did that about 9/11.
Yeah, and he used to Europe.
And he now lives in Austria.
he felt unsafe here.
Yeah, they threatened to do something to hurt him. And he's a wealthy guy who put out ads and tried to get people to realize what was going on 9/11.
He just didn't feel safe here.
But he no longer was comfortable living here and had to leave.
Well,
but anyway, that's the show tonight.
And good night, folks, and hope you have a peaceful week. And let's hope for some nice weather in New England. We haven't had any, and sunshine in a lot of the other parts of the country, too, if you're a listener.
And don't forget, if you miss us this week, go to lasteelshow.org, our webpage, and check out my art and photography website as well. Link to that to the main menu. And also, don't forget to check out our YouTube channel. We have about 40 different programs there, updated, all the television programs that we've done. Interviews that we've conducted and so on, all video programs. And, hopefully you'll enjoy that. That's L.A. Steel Show /YouTube.com. Okay? In the meantime, good night, everybody. Love you. Take care.